Okay, so for those who were here last week, we began a new series speaking about some of the Gedolim who shaped the Musar movement. And last week we had the chance to very briefly meet Rav Yisrael Salanter. Rav Yisrael Salanter is usually considered to be the founder of the Musar movement, and tonight we have the schus to interact a little bit. And again, like we said last week, it's really just a tiny little taste of a world of a person's life. But tonight we'll get a little taste of the altar of Kelm, Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv, or Rav Simcha Zissel Breida. We'll talk about his name. Sometimes you see it brought in different ways. And someone shared with me this week something that I have to share with you just by way of introduction. Because the next 3 weeks we're going to talk about the altar of Kelm. Next week, Mirza Hashem will talk about the altar of Navardik. And the week after that we'll talk about the altar of Slobodka. The altar of Navardik was also a Talmud of Rav Simcha Zissel and Rav Yisrael Salanter. The altar of Slobodka was a Talmud of Rav Simcha Zissel, the altar of Kelm, who we'll learn about tonight. And sort of just to lay a foundation for ourselves, just to give us a sense of where the Musar movement is heading after that world of Rav Yisrael Salanter that we encountered last week, I have to share with you this beautiful piece of Torah. It comes from a Sefer Mishulchan, Rav Eliyahu Baruch. Rav Eliyahu Baruch Finkel was a great-grandson of the altar of Slobodka. Rav Eliyahu Baruch Finkel gave the second largest shiur in the Mir Yeshiva, literally to hundreds of people, till his very sudden patir in 2008. And they printed some of his teachings on Chumash. And in this past week's Sedra, he goes through a very famous Rashi and presents it to us with seven different explanations according to seven different schools of thought. And three of them happen to be Kelm, Navardik, and Slobodka, and I want to share that with you. What Rashi am I referring to? You look in source number one. Pasuk tells us that after the brothers had decided, they had a din Torah, and they put Yosef into the pit, and they sat down to eat lunch. Vayeshu lecho lechem. Again, hard for us to understand. Very deep things. Vayisu einayim v'yiru v'hinei orchos yishma'elim ba migilad. They suddenly looked up, and they see a caravan of Ishmaelites coming. Ugamaleim nosim nechos utzri v'lo tolchim lohorit Mitzrayim. And they see that this wagon is traveling, a caravan of Yishma'elim heading to Mitzrayim, and they're carrying all sorts of nice-smelling spices. Says Rashi, very famously in source number 2, Lama pirsam akasav es masa'am. Why do I care to know what they're carrying? Seems like such a irrelevant detail in the larger picture of what's happening here. Yosef Atzadik is about to be sold to Mitzrayim. The brothers are so angry, such hatred for their brother. Who cares that the Yishma'elim are carrying a caravan full of sweet-smelling spices? Says Rashi very famously, Lo diya matan scharan shal tzadikim. From here we learn the matan scharan, the reward for a tzadik, she'ein darchan shal arviyim, laseis elaneft, v'itron, sherechan ra. Normally the Yishma'elim would be carrying very foul-smelling spices, not even spices, they would be carrying foul-smelling materials, they'd be carrying petroleum and all sorts of fuels, things that have a very strong negative smell. And Yosef, on his way down to Mitzrayim, is going to have a very nice-smelling wagon ride. It's a very famous Rashi, and we wonder what the lesson in this Rashi is. That's, again, we're still bothered. This is what we have to be concerned with. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the wagon smell nice as Yosef is being sold by his own brothers. So again, Rav Eliyahu Baruch Finkel Zatzal from Mir offers seven explanations in his Sefer Mishulchan. It was published posthumously. Seven different explanations of and seven perspectives on this Rashi. Kelm, Navardik, Slobodka, Mir, Brisk, Tells, and Chassidus. And how each of these worlds of Torah thought would approach such a Rashi. Let's learn the three that we're going to encounter in the next 3 weeks. Kelm, Navardik, and Slobodka. Okay, take a look at source number 3. And I'll add Chassidus not just because I enjoy Chassidus, but you'll see how it's linked to those who were here in the last series when we spoke about the five senses. You'll see how the approach of Chassidus actually makes a lot of sense. It'll be a little bit of a chazarish here for those of us who learned together in the previous series. So says Rav Eliyahu Baruch Finkel in source number 3. Rabboseinu Balei HaMusar Heiru Bezeh Dikduk HaHashgacha Elyona Al Kol Hergesh Sar Bifnei Atzma. The different Balei HaMusar say, look how precise everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is. Look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided Yosef with this sweet-smelling caravan. But what's the lesson? What's the nuance, so to speak, within these various movements, within the Musar movement, of how to understand this Rashi? So he says, Aleph, in the second line, V'kelm hochichu mikan es diktuk hadin, shegam be'ez sheba gezeira o'onesh ala adam, hakol madud b'tachlis hadiktuk. In Kelm, in the Beis Medrash in Kelm, that we're going to enter into tonight, the altar of Kelm, The attitude of Kelm was, look how precise HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. Look at the Diktuk HaDin. Look how everything is so precisely measured that even when Yosef HaTzadik is going to be sold, and Yosef HaTzadik is going to suffer in this way, Eino Nenash Bechi Hu Zeh Yoser Meharo Ilam. Everything is so precise that if he doesn't need to have a foul-smelling caravan, then he's not going to have such a thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that this had to be, that Yosef had to be sold by the brothers. Look in the Chovas HaLevavos, he talks about how Be'ashkach Elyona, this had to be. And yet, look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu measured everything so precisely that the tzaddik shouldn't suffer a bit more than is necessary. V'ayinu shekeven shalom igia liYosef. Saval zeh shal ruach ra, af shedover zeh hu zuter b'yachas l'matzavah. Even though, again, in the big picture, it's a tiny detail. It's a small thing compared to the overall situation he finds himself in. But that's how Hashem runs the world. Because Yosef was not destined to suffer in this way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu moved down the pieces and had a caravan of Yishmaelim who would normally be carrying these foul-smelling things, carry beautiful spices to make sure that the tzaddik would get exactly what he deserves. And that not one bit of what happens in this world should be seen as shelo kedin. That's how they would explain it in Kel. What was the nuance of difference, the way they would explain it in Slobodka? Again, we'll encounter Slobodka in 2 weeks. In Slobodka, he writes, Beis, where it's bolded, Slobodka. In Slobodka, he iru miklal zeh on the kudas godless nefesh ha'atam. We'll learn that one of the hallmarks of that world of Slobodka, and so many great yeshivas emerged from the Talmidim of the altar of Slobodka. The altar of Slobodka emphasized godless ha'atam, the greatness of man, the elevated stature of man. How do you see that in such a Rashi? The way that we would explain this Rashi, Alpi the Derech of Slobodka, even a person who's b'shafal hamadrega in a very lowly situation, a person who's being sold as a lowly slave, he's about to be sold as a slave. That a person, even when he finds himself in a very lowly situation, can't lose himself. Godless ha'adam. And therefore, I can't lose my senses. And you would think, what difference does it make what the wagon smells like? But for a person who recognizes the greatness of man, Yosef HaTzadik was the type of person who carried himself with distinction. Godless ha'adam, being sold as a slave, that's true. But I'm not going to lose my sense of self. I'm not going to allow my senses to be dulled by this experience. And therefore, I want to travel. I want to travel in a way that expresses a little bit of Kavod HaTorah. Right? And therefore, Yosef HaTzadik was zochet to travel in such a way that he should maintain some very fine way, but he should maintain a certain dignity even as he's being sold as a slave. Because a person has to always remember who he is. Godless Adam, the greatness of man. In the Vardik, which was much more intense in the heaviness of Musar, not the Musar of the greatness of man, but the Musar of the lowliness of man, in the Vardik they would read a Rashi like this, the exact opposite. And concludes Rav Eliyahu Baruch. Rav Eliyahu Baruch Finkel concludes, Gimel, bin a Vardik, heviu mizeh le'idach chisa, the very opposite direction. It comes rather, lehiro, it said, kama adam kavul achar in yonei ha'olam. Look how a person can be in such a low state, and this is what he's thinking about. Flip it on its head. In the Vardik, we're teaching us. The Vardik, the Beis Medrash was teaching us that here you are, you're being sold as a slave, and all you care about is how does the wagon smell? Don't you realize how low man can become? That's something that Yosef would be paying attention to? No, again, Rashi told us that Hashem was paying attention, not Yosef. But in the Vardik, they took a Musar lesson the other way. That sometimes we get so caught up in these little details, we miss the big picture. That we're not focused on the bigger things that need to be fixed in our life. Namely, the fact that we've sometimes become a slave to our Yetzirah, or a slave to our desires, and we're caught up on the little minor details, the pleasures of this world. And again, that was the heavy-handed approach of Navardik, which we'll learn a lot more about next week. I told you, I just mentioned B'derech Agav, how Chassidus explains it, and Rav Eliyahu Baruch quotes from the Rebbe of Varki, Rav Yitzchak of Varki, who explained that HaKadosh Baruch was saying to Yosef, it's true, your body's going to suffer a lot, but don't lose your senses. If you remember in the first year on the senses, for those who were here, we spoke about the sense of smell. And smell, we explained, corresponds to the neshama. The Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis, that how do you know you make a bracha on smell? Because the pasuk says, "Kol hanishama ta'alka aluka." When the neshama enjoys something in this world, you have to say ha'aluka. You have to say thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to Yosef, "Listen, on the level of the body, this is a very broken situation. But don't lose your sense of reyach. Don't lose the sweet smell that corresponds to the neshama. Don't allow your neshama to be dragged through the mud, even though your body is about to endure much suffering and much struggle." So again, I couldn't hold back from sharing this piece with you, as this is where we're heading, into the base measures of Kalman, into Slobodka, and into Novartik. So now we come to our hero for tonight, the world of Rav Simcha Zissel of Kalman. Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv lived, his life span the latter three quarters of the 19th century. He lived from the years 1824 to 1898. And he was probably, arguably, the most chashuv, the most important Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter. Someone who Rav Yisrael Salanter would call upon to spread the messages of Mussar outwards. He was sent on missions throughout Lithuania, through Russia, Latvia, to spread the message of Rav Yisrael Salanter. And he became known as the Altar of Kelm based on the yeshiva we'll see much later that he was able to establish in Kelm, in Lithuania. Now I just want to comment regarding his name, because sometimes you see his name and you see some of his family members have the last name Ziv, and some of them have the last name Breida. Sometimes he's called Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv, sometimes he's called Rav Simcha Zissel Breida. The reason that is because his father, Rabbi Yisrael, was from the very famous Lithuanian family, the Breida family. His mother was a descendant of the Chacham Tzvi, and her family name was Ziv. For a long time, for most of his life, he went by the name Breida, but later in life, he switched over to the name Ziv. Now, I didn't see why that is. I wasn't able to see in the books that I was looking at why that was so. Right? I would guess, based on other similar accounts, that very often when people would have to cross various borders from one country to another, sometimes for purposes of paperwork, they had to adopt an alternate name. So that's why later in life, from 1880 and on, which again is really the last 20 years of his life, Rav Simcha Zissel took on the name Ziv, which again was his mother Chaya's family name. And that's how he's often referred to in the Svarim, Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv. In 1880, Rav Simcha Zissel was moving about, and he took on that name. He took on that name Ziv. But his real name, in truth, if you want to know his actual name, the name that he was given at his birth, was Rav Simcha Mordechai Ziskind Breida. Okay? So Rav Simcha Zissel, as he's lovingly known, but his full name was Simcha Mordechai Ziskind. Again, his father's name was Breida, his mother's name was Ziv. It's confusing enough as it is, and we'll focus on his life and spend less time trying to figure out what his name is. Because the essence of a person is really their life and their legacy, much more than their name. Rav Simcha Zissel, we don't know so much about his younger years. Eventually he married and moved to Kovna, and that's where he encountered Rav Yisrael Salanter. He became a Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter in Kovna, the second largest city in Lithuania. He studied under him for many years. And like I said, Rav Yisrael would send him on various missions to spread outward the messages of Mussar to the world. When he was about 40 years old, Rav Simcha Zissel felt that he needed to do something more in order to combat some of the forces that were trying to, like we spoke about last week, some of the forces from within and from without, which he felt were watering down Judaism. And therefore he decided to establish his own yeshiva, the Kelm Talmud Torah. The Kelm Talmud Torah. He was 40 years old at the time. Kelm was in northern Lithuania. And he opened what would have been considered, I guess, a boys' high school. Right? For 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, a middle school, a high school. Most of the students were 13, 14 years old. And he opened up this yeshiva and began to teach the messages of Mussar. That people should be able to, again, focus on the development of the person, and not only to develop the mind in terms of the study of Gemara, which was commonplace in Lithuanian yeshivas. Now, again, one of the major novelties of Simcha Zissel, and we'll see with all of these great personalities, that they were revolutionaries. And Rav Simcha Zissel introduced into the Talmud Torah and Kalm something which was completely unheard of at the time. Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv introduced into his yeshiva 3 hours a day of general studies, of secular studies. Geography, mathematics, Russian language. And again, for 13 and 14-year-old boys, in a yeshiva setting of any type, to study those types of things was completely unheard of at the time. And Rav Simcha Zissel didn't understand it. His attitude wasn't that, you know, this is a necessary evil, and we have to adopt it in order to allow the yeshiva to remain open. There were other yeshivas that closed their doors rather than to adopt such an approach. But Rav Simcha Zissel didn't feel this was a bidi evad. Rav Simcha Zissel felt that people would have a better understanding of the fullness of life if they were to incorporate into their lives some of the basic ideas of life itself, and to pick their head up out of the Gemara once in a while. He felt that they would be broader and deeper religious people. And needless to say, Simchas Yisrael faced a lot of opposition for that. In 1872, it was time to finally take the yeshiva to the next level. And he was able, with some help from some very righteous individuals, to buy a building. He opened the official building of the Talmud Torah in 1872. 4 years later, in 1876, there were many people who opposed Simchas Yisrael again, those within the Orthodox camp and those from without. And unfortunately, he realized that it wasn't going to work. He decided he needs to close his yeshiva. And he packed up and he headed north geographically on the map, above Lithuania is Latvia. And he decided to try to reopen. And that's what he did. In 1880, he was able to reopen his yeshiva. Now he's in his mid-50s. And he was able to reopen this yeshiva, the extension of the Kelm Talmud Torah, in a place called Groben, which is in Latvia. Rav Simchas Yisrael was only able to run the yeshiva for about a year. If you read some of the Svarim that describe his life, Rav Simchas Yisrael was physically a very broken person his whole life. He suffered terribly from many illnesses and from much weakness of body. Spirit, he was a lion. But in terms of his physical stature, he was a very weak person, he was a very sickly person throughout his life. And therefore in 1881 he moved back to Kelm, to the actual place Kelm, and he left his son, Rav Nachum Zev, to run the yeshiva. What's interesting is that when he came back to Kelm, people wanted to gather around him again. So many young people from Kelm and from neighboring areas, they all crowded around Rav Simchas Yisrael. They wanted to learn with him. And Kelm once again became a vibrant center of Musar. And from a distance, he was able to conduct the yeshiva. It got to a point where he felt, I'm not able to run the yeshiva properly from a distance. His son was running it in Groben, in Latvia. But he felt that was his yeshiva, and he had to take achrayas for his own yeshiva. And he decided it was time to close the yeshiva. Now there's a teaching from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that resonates with me in a very deep way. I first saw this teaching in one of the Sfarim from Shimshon Pinkus. But it's brought in other Sfarim that have statements from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And I think it's just very true to the honesty of the Musar movement. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, anyone who can't close a yeshiva shouldn't open a yeshiva. If you don't know when it's time to call it quits, then you shouldn't get involved. If you don't know when you're past your prime, and when your message is not resonating anymore, right? And it's time to hang up the hat and the coat, so to speak, and to retire, then you shouldn't get started in the business of teaching Torah, in the business of being a Rav, or being a head of a yeshiva. So Rav Simchas Yisrael figured, I'm not able to run the yeshiva properly anymore. And he decided it was time to close the yeshiva. And again, that was generally his Rebbe's approach. This is what's quoted from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He went to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and asked Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he said, I'm not able to run the yeshiva from Kelm. And I can't put the full burden upon my son in Groben to actually run the yeshiva. So I'm thinking about closing the yeshiva. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, absolutely not. He said, my health is failing. He said, absolutely not. You have to do what you can. It's so important that your yeshiva stays open. And for 5 more years, from a distance, Rav Simchas Yisrael was able to help to run the yeshiva from a distance. Again, his son was running it on the front lines. But again, after a couple of years, 5, 6 years later, it was really time. His health was really failing. The doctors were worried for his life. And it was time to really close the yeshiva. And at that point, Kelm was going to be his place. And again, he was very weak at this point. So towards the end of his life, 1886, final 10 years of his life or so. And he gathered together again a group of Talmidim, so to speak, Talmidim, not in any official yeshiva capacity. But he decided to get together a group. He called them the Devek Tov, a group of people who were dedicated to working on themselves in a very serious way, which again was the hallmark of the Musar movement. And that's what he did for the remainder of his life. A couple of his Talmidim moved to Eretz Yisrael towards the end, opened the base of Musar in Yerushalayim, which was under his auspices, again, from a great distance. And on Erev Tisha B'Av, 1898, he got up in the morning, he said Shema, and right before he got to Shmon Esrei, he passed away. This is a brief sketch of the life of Rav Simchas Yisrael. They have to understand how misunderstood the Altar of Kelm was. Not just in terms of his lessons and the way that he thought differently, which we'll talk about. But you have to understand that the Altar of Kelm was ridiculed by some as not being a real Talmud Chacham. Remember last week we shared the story that Rav Yisrael Salanter was once speaking about the Altar of Kelm, about his Talmud of Simchas Yisrael so lovingly, and he was praising, he was showering praise upon him. And there was another rabbi who was there, and this other rabbi said, yeah, but if he would stop with the Musar books, and he would just sit and learn Gemara, the way Jews are supposed to learn Gemara, he'd become a real gadol. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's response was, there's a halach in Shulchan Aruch. If you have two loaves of bread, one is very large, but is incomplete, and one is very small, but is whole, which one do you make the bracha upon? You make the bracha upon the one that's shalim. Yisrael Salanter said, being shalom is much more important than being a gadol. That was his description of his Talmud of Simchas Yisrael. And Rabbi Shaul Salanter once commented about his Talmud of Simcha Zisel. He said, "My, the people don't realize that a good portion of the world is upheld by Simcha Zisel." And just to show you how much they don't understand, Rabbi Shaul Salanter said that when they call Rabbi Simcha Zisel for an aliyah, and they call him up, Harav, Simcha Zisel, some of the balabatim in the shul, they're murmuring under their breath, "He's a Rav, this is a Rav, call this a Rav." People didn't understand who he was. He was like Rabbi Shaul himself, he was a Gaon in Nigla, a master of Talmud. But again, he was a person who was focused sort of on the bigger picture of what it means to be a Jew. And he was a very hidden person, like all the Bali Musar. It was hard to understand. Many of them hid themselves from the public light. And the little bit that we do know about them is only from those Talmidim and family members who had the chutzpah to share with us some of the inner world of these very great tzaddikim. But again, he was misunderstood because he thought so differently. We don't have time to shear in love itself. And again, we have 25 minutes to try to talk about someone as big as Rav Simcha Zisel. But needless to say, when he opened the yeshiva and started teaching secular studies for 3 hours a day, he was teaching, again, Russian language, and he was teaching history, and he was teaching mathematics. Needless to say, he faced a lot of opposition for that. He was a person who thought very differently. He was a person who looked at the needs of the time and was willing to embrace certain things which he felt were necessary to create, again, not a bidyavid, not because people couldn't get a job, not because the Russian government was pressuring or the Lithuanian government was pressuring him to incorporate into the curriculum of the yeshiva. He took those things into his yeshiva because he felt that creates a more wholesome experience. And again, the hallmark of the Muslim woman was becoming a wholesome person. But I can assure you, that again, as much as some would try to jump on Simcha Zisel and claim, "Oh, look how progressive he is," the same way the Maskilim last week tried to take Rav Yisrael Salanter and claim he's one of their own just because he was a sensitive human being, I can assure you that Simcha Zisel, Torah was primary in his life. There's a line that I saw in one of the Sfarim that collects some comments from Simcha Zisel, and it said that he spent 6 years. 6 years. Talk about a person. Again, who was focused and willing to work on himself. For 6 years, he learned the third section of Rabbeinu Yonah's Shari Tshuva. For 6 years. He didn't get bored. He didn't switch to a different sefer every other week. For 6 years, he learned that. And at the end, he commented, and again, this was a person who had worldly knowledge. Rav Simcha Zisel said, "The knowledge that the greatest philosopher Aristotle achieved in his lifetime doesn't compare to one word that Rabbeinu Yonah wrote in the third chelik of the Shari Tshuva." So there's no question his respect for Torah and Torah authorities was far beyond anything that he could find in any other secular type of endeavor or literature or the like. Right? But he was a person who wanted to embrace the wholesomeness of life. And again, he faced much opposition because of that. Like Rabbi Shaul Salanter, I don't think I have to tell you, Rabbi Simcha Zisel was a very sensitive person. Last year we shared the story of Rabbi Shaul Salanter on his deathbed, spent the last moments of his life turning to a young man who was sitting alongside him, who was frightened that if Rabbi Shaul Salanter dies on his watch, what's that going to mean? How fearful that would be. How frightening that would be. Rabbi Shaul Salanter calmed him down and said, "Don't worry, it's not so scary to be left alone with a dead body." Right, speaking generally. And the young man found out a few hours later, he was talking about Rabbi Shaul Salanter, realized his own end was near, and he didn't spend his last minutes in a quiet and private moment with Hashem, or with a family member. He sat with the person who had been assigned to him, and he calmed him down. That you don't have to be nervous, you don't have to be frightened, always thinking of others. We shared many stories of that type last week by Rabbi Shaul Salanter. Rabbi Simcha Zisel was exactly the same. That sensitivity literally to the last moments of his life, when Rabbi Simcha Zisel was on his deathbed. He turned to his family members. Again, this was shortly before he passed away, a couple of days before he passed away. It was very clear that his end was near. And he turned to his family members and he said, "We need to strategize. I want to make sure that all of my clothing is clean. Because when I pass away, I'd like to donate my clothing to the poor. And I don't want them to have to wait. I don't want the people to have to wait. I want them to be able to enjoy the fresh, clean clothing right away." This is what a person is thinking about in the final moments of his life, the final days of his life. But again, this was the sensitivity of Rabbi Shaul Salanter and the sensitivity of his Talmud Muvhak, Rabbi Simcha Zisel Ziv. I want to share some Torah insights. Last week we spent a long time telling stories about Rabbi Shaul. We only saw a little bit of the Igaras HaMusar. And I want to learn a little bit more insight, just to share a few ideas. Again, it's an ocean of ideas that we have, ksavim, from Rabbi Simcha Zisel and his Talmidim, letters, all sorts of wondrous things. But I hope that if we can get a taste of a few of his Torahs, we'll get a sense of who the person was. And I'll actually share with you an insight that he shared on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which tells us that sometimes if you taste a little of something, you get the full experience. What does it say in Shir HaShirim? In Shir HaShirim it says, Chiku Mamtokim Vakulo Machmadim, the fifth parak of Shir Hashirim. Chiku Mamtokim, his palate is full of sweet things, Vakulo Machmadim, and all of him is a delight. The lovers in Shir Hashirim speaking to one another so lovingly. Rav Simcha Zisa once explained the pasuk, Chiku Mamtokim, if a person tastes and experiences the sweetness of Torah, even if you never get to study the entirety of Torah, and again, that was the approach of the Bali Musar, better to spend, as many stories tell, countless nights, all night, repeating over and over and over again, one Maimer Chazal, one Pasuk, drilling it into your mind and into your heart. That's more meaningful and more valuable than trying to study the full ocean of Torah, which is impossible to complete. Says Rav Simcha Zisal, Chiku Mam Takim, if you taste the sweetness of Torah, and you really taste it, you really internalize it, then you'll realize, even though you never experienced everything, but you'll realize the end of that Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which is what? Kulo Machmad, that the entire thing is sweet. A taste, a one real taste of Torah, a wholesome taste of Torah, will testify to the entirety of Torah, that the entire Torah is sweet. So let's taste a few Divrei Torah from Rav Simcha Zisal, and then we'll get a sense of, again, maybe the fullness of who Rav Simcha Zisal was. Great people are very complex, and great people at the same time are very simple. Rav Simcha Zisal used to say that the Torah is actually divided into three parts. The Torah is divided into three parts. Pashtus, Amkus, and Pashtus. Simplicity, complexity, and simplicity. And I think that's a beautiful, again, from the little bit that I've studied about Rav Simcha Zisal and his Torahs, I think it's a beautiful description. A person on the one hand, who was so pashut, who was so simple, who was so disinterested in the pleasures of this world, was so satisfied with the bare minimum of what this world has to offer. Right? And yet at the same time, a person who sought out depth in life's experience, I wanted to experience everything, the wholesomeness of life, and yet a return to Pashas at the same time. How do we reconcile the fact that on the one hand, Rav Simcha Zisal was fighting against reform, was fighting against Haskalah, was fighting against new movements of Yiddishkeit, and yet at the same time, had the courage and the audacity to create a yeshiva that was entirely different than the norms of Lithuanian yeshivas at the time? How do you explain such a complexity? And it's a very fine line. And it's very much nogeya to the yom tov that we find ourselves in the middle of, Chanukah. On Chanukah, we know the Yevanim breached the fences around the Beis HaMikdash. And they came and they patched up those fences like the Mishnah describes in Maseches Midos. And anytime a Jew comes to one of those 13 places where the Yevanim had breached the fence, you prostrate yourself, you bow down by that fence. We fix the fences. We don't allow any breaches in the Mesorah, in our Yiddishkeit. That everything has to be transmitted, Rebbe to Talmud. There's no room for innovation. There's no room for novelty. Any change is by definition a destruction of Torah. That's one way to look at things. Now, Rav Simcha Zisal was a big defender of the way that things are. He once saw, by the Talmud Torah, he once saw, there was a fence around the yard of the Talmud Torah, a beautiful yard, by the yeshiva building. He once saw one of the young men in the yeshiva jump over the fence. Instead of walking around like a mensch, he jumped over the fence. And Rav Simcha Zisal was on the verge of tears. He said, a young man who jumps over a fence that was put up to stop people from walking there. And this fellow jumps over the fence. He says, I'm very worried for this young man. I don't know what other fences he's going to breach in his own lifetime. I don't understand how a person could be so brazen to jump over a fence like that. What does it say about his personality? Is he going to be Mekayim the fences that Chazal have set up to protect the Torah? Is he going to be Mekayim the fences that Hashem set up to protect his world? So on the one hand, Rav Simcha Zisal was staunch in his lack of willingness to compromise. That he was the defender of authentic Torah, and yet he was a revolutionary. He was a person who taught a very different Torah than the Torah that was going on around him. I want to share with you an insight from Rav Simcha Zisal that I think expresses this. And again, it's pashut, and it's complex, and it's pashut all at the same time. The pasuk says in Parshas Vayelech, in source number 4, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Klal Yisrael, Ki anochi adati es meriecha ves arpecha akasha. I know your stubbornness, I know your rebelliousness, I know the fact that you're refusal to listen to me and to listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hein ba'odeni chai imachem ayom ma'amir ma'yisim v'mashah. That today while I'm still here and I'm still alive, in my face, Moshe Rabbeinu says, you have the audacity to disregard me and to disregard the word of Hashem. Va'af ki achrei mosi, and all the more so after I die. Explained Rav Simcha Zisal, it's quoted in the Sefer HaMa'oros HaGedolim. What does it mean, es meriecha, your rebelliousness, ves arpecha hakasha, and your stiff-neckedness? What does that mean? To be a stiff-necked people and to be a rebellious people. Explained to Rav Simcha Zisal. that sometimes having a little chutzpah is a good thing. And sometimes being stubborn is a bad thing. As Meryacha, Zeu tzadik yisar and abba mitzad akshanus. Sometimes a person is too stubborn to change, not willing to embrace and to recognize the challenges of the times which we live, and to make the changes that are necessary to help Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter made changes to help Klal Yisrael. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter could be trusted to make those changes. Rabbi Simcha Zisel made changes to help Klal Yisrael. And he says sometimes we become rebellious in the sense that we're too stubborn, we refuse to change. And that leads to a rebellion against the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Because if we can't change in the right way, we end up changing in the wrong way. V'as arpecha kasha, but Moshe says there's also a time to be a stiff-necked people. But sometimes we have to say, these fences can't be jumped. These fences can't be moved. When a person faces an nisayon, shu muchan lamo the lo ziz min chonaso, limsores nasho al davar tov mitzvah, to be able to stand up, to be courageous, and to be prepared not to move from his position, which is correct, not to move one inch from that which is good and that which is proper and that which is a mitzvah. V'lo yechas v'lo yisog achor, not to retreat, not to be frightened. But makom shu miskom mafriyam neged the Torah. When people come to challenge the Torah, to confront the Torah, be stubborn, hold on to the standards that the Jewish people live by. So how do you reconcile that in Rav Simcha Zisel's life? On the one hand, he's fighting against movements that are changing, and he himself is a movement that's changing. How do you understand such a thing? But that's what he said. The Torah is divided into pashtus and amkus and pashtus. It was so obvious to him that something needed to change. It was so complicated to make those changes. And yet at the end of the day, Rav Simcha Zisel was a person who understood the wholeness of life's experience and was able to make those changes in a way that was correct. How do we know? We think about this a lot on Hanukkah. How do we know who's entitled to an opinion? Who's entitled to make changes? Who has their hand or their spirit on the pulse of Klal Yisrael to recognize what's going to keep Klal Yisrael alive and what's going to destroy the Torah? It's not a pashut thing. A person has to have thoughtfulness. A person has to be very much self-aware of why he's making those changes. A person has to be a person of Yiras Shamayim. And a person has to be a person whose life is in order, is misudar, that every decision that he makes is thoughtful, is thought through carefully, is spoken over with greater people than himself, and all of those qualities were found by Rav Simcha Zisel. The Svarim say that when Rav Simcha Zisel used to come to shul, he would stand by his shtender. And again, you get a sense, sometimes it doesn't take long to look at a tzaddik and say, this is the type of person who could be trusted to make those delicate changes, to perform those delicate procedures on a Klal Yisrael that's sick and needs to be fixed. He needs to be healed. But Simcha Zisel would stand by his shtender, the Svarim say, like a person, like a king's soldier, who would stand on guard. It was with that degree of awe you could see when he stood before Kadosh Baruch Hu. His son said about his Yiras Shamayim, my father was like a man with a sharp knife at his neck. Any careless move would harm him. Every move was so precise, so calculated. The Bali Musar, they wouldn't move one inch without making a cheshvan for hours, for days sometimes. Rav Simcha Zisel says, if you look by Avram Avinu, it says that Avram Avinu, Vayisa Avram Einav, that Avram lifted his eyes and he saw. Why does the Torah have to say that he lifted his eyes? That he picked up his eyes? But the answer is, for a Baal Musar, it's very obvious. For a Baal Musar, a person moves his head, he needs to makes a calculation. That Avram, when he lifts up his head, when he opens his eyes, when he sees something, everything is calculated. Everything is precise. Again, like his son described, with the sword at his neck, that God forbid one wrong move could cost him everything. His son-in-law said, my father-in-law was like a lion trainer. A person who's training a lion. You can't take your eye off the lion for one second. You can end up getting yourself killed. You have to keep your eye on the lion. And you have to watch every move, never letting your mind wander. He said, my father-in-law had the ability to wrap his mind around the Torah idea and to meditate upon it and to chazer it over and over and to deepen it in his understanding of that idea for hours and hours and hours at a time. Rav Simcha Zisel would make a cheshbon nefesh at the end of his day. And he can make an accounting for every single detail of his day. I can't even tell you where I davened shacharis this morning. Rav Simcha Zisel had every second of every day, he would review it at the end of the day and try to learn from it. How can I improve myself? And his Seder, which was one of the hallmarks of Rav Simcha Zisel's attitude towards life, that a person has to have Seder in his life. That the pieces of my life have to come together in the right way. And I can't be scattered, I can't be all over the place. Because if I live in such a way, that I'm not living with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. He said that the Rosh Yeshivos, Chazal say, Rosh Yeshivos in Bavel were called Reshei Desidra. Roshei Desidra. Roshei Desidra means to be a Rosh Yeshiva, you have to be a person of Seder. You have to be a person who knows how to make Seder out of one's life, how to make Seder out of the Torah, how to run a yeshiva in a way that's organized. And again, in Kelm, that was one of the hallmarks of the yeshiva. There was a lock with a key to the bathroom. And it was said that not once did that key ever go missing. No one ever forgot to put the key back after using the bathroom. Someone once hung up a cane by a coat rack in Kelm. Person forgot their cane at the coat rack in Kelm. And they came back a couple years later and it was exactly where they left it. It wasn't moved, it wasn't touched. Everything was precise, everything was calculated. We spoke last week about Rishol Salanter's concern for other people's possessions. If you left something in Kelm, it was going to be there. Right? There was a Seder to things. Everything was calculated. Nothing was in disarray. He would say, he would point out how the Hadassim, if the leaves are scattered, the Halacha says that it's disqualified. So Rav Simcha Zitzis said all the more so. If our lives are scattered, then our life is puzzle. He would point out that there's a very fine line. When a shochet shechs an animal, there's a fine line between kosher meat and not kosher meat. And there's only a moment of time that distinguishes between Shabbos and Chol. In Rav Simcha Zitzis' world, everything was precisely calculated. So much so that in Kelm, and I always found this so amazing, in Kelm, they used to have a 5-minute Seder. A 5-minute Seder limud. A calculated time where they were asked to come to the Beis Medrash for 5 minutes, and after that, everyone please leave the Beis Medrash. Because he wanted to teach them the value of 5 minutes of time. That every moment matters. Every second is calculated. And at the same time, he wanted to teach them how to be able to do things, not only for a second and to value that, but to do things for very long stretches and to value that. At one point in the yeshiva, he organized, he decreed that the Talmidim should wake up at 3:30 in the morning, they should eat breakfast, from 4 to 7 they should learn, and at 7:30 they should daven shachars. And the Talmidim said, why do we have to do that? The same number of hours were still being learned over the course of the day. He said, because I want to teach you that you can wake up at 3:30 in the morning. I don't want you to spend your life saying I can't, that I can't arrange my day in such a way. I want you to realize that you can, that a person of Seder can arrange his day in such a way, and he can organize his life in such a day. And such a person like this, such a person of thoughtfulness, of Seder, of sensitivity. Again, the signs of all of the Bali Musar, such Yiras Shamayim, whose every move is calculated, like a person with a knife against his neck, or like a lion trainer keeping his eye on the lion that he's responsible for. Such a person can be trusted to mold the educational system of the Jewish people. At least I feel that way. And I think history has proven. While it wasn't simple for Simcha Zitzel to make certain choices that he made, to create the yeshiva that he did, and to learn the Sfarim that he did, and there were many, again, who questioned him in both directions. Rav Simcha Zitzel was someone who had such a love for his Talmidim. A person who shaped so many young Talmidim. People flocked him because his message was resonating with people. Turn over to the back side of the page. We only have a few minutes left. But I want to share with you, just trying to figure out what piece to share. There's a little sefer called Chaim Musar. It's a collection of different letters and teachings and things from different Musar personalities. And on page 153, in the first volume of the Chaim Musar, there's a mimer called Mimer HaChinuch from Rav Simcha Zitzel. And I picked this piece because, again, Rav Simcha Zitzel was someone who was very creative in terms of molding the educational system of the Jewish people. He was someone who was recognized as being a great mechanech. And also it's Chanukah. And Chanukah, we know, is a time where many Sfarim talk about Chanukah Milashon Chinuch. It's a time where we focus on how are we going to transmit the values that we hold dear to the next generation. And therefore, I thought it would be fitting to read a little bit from this piece. I'm going to read just a few lines of it inside. But he writes in this letter, it's called here Maimer Achinuch. Yechalchel bo ad heichan yagi achil achinuch lebanim be'ein pekicha me'od lemalem idas adam. How much thought and sensitivity and creativity. And again, I know I'm not translating literally, but I'm trying to give a little bit of the flavor of how I think Rav Simcha Zitzel would have expressed himself. Right? How much detail, how much care and concern and consideration have to go into the chinuch, the education of our children. It reminds us how much a person needs someone to guide him. And again, he clung to his Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, to gain that guidance. Because it's impossible to educate unless you see it from a master educator. And again, Rav Simcha Zitzel had such a Rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Va'amarnu, he writes in the third line. And look at this line. If a person would be dochel chata and would be afraid of sin, he would be frightened to get married. Laholid banim, He would be scared to have children. Terem yedav yislami darche echinach. Until he first studied and mastered what it means to educate. What an achrayus it is. Many have pointed out. You know, there's so many jobs that you can't get unless you have certain qualifications, certain degrees. To become a parent, no one has to pass any tests. There's no qualifications. And yet, a person who's God-fearing understands how frightening it is, the responsibility of educating a Jewish person. So much so, he writes, the Rabbi Yochanan said about himself, in Kivuvadah Ha'erodif Acher Mitzvos. Rabbi Yochanan undoubtedly was a person who loved mitzvos. Chacham Leiv Yikach Mitzvos. Any Chacham desires more and more mitzvos. Or like Moshe Rabbeinu who chose to carry the bones of Yosef HaTzadik because he was seeking more and more mitzvos. And yet, Rabbi Yochanan said about himself, Im Kol Zeh, Machlas Shayel Dachil Chatan, he was so afraid of sin, Amar Al Mitzvos Kibur Ave'im. Rav Yochanan said about the mitzvah of Kibud Avim, such a challenging and demanding mitzvah, Ashrei mi shelo chaman, praiseworthy, as tragic as it is to not have parents, praiseworthy is the person who never had the opportunity to be challenged by this mitzvah of Kibud Avim, because you're basically guaranteed to fail. There is nothing that a person can do to thank one's parents enough for that which they've done for us, as the Sefer Achinuch writes in Mitzvah Lamed Gimel. Ki mi yachol etzeis yidei chovasa, because who can fulfill his obligation? Who could possibly fulfill the mitzvah of Kibud Av Ve'Em in the proper way? Says of Simcha Zisal, I'll go one step further. Ukamo king, Yoser Yesh Lefacher Adam Pen Lo Yechanech Bonav Karoi. Alachas Kama Vakama. Does a parent need to be frightened to make sure, am I going to be able to inspire my child? Am I going to make sure that my child becomes a wholesome human being in a very complicated world? Can my child be postured and complex and postured all at the same time? That's a hard message to convey. Can I fight against those who are changing Yiddishkeit while at the same time having the courage and the foresight to recognize that certain things are needed in order to help Torah continue into the future? We don't have time to read the rest of the piece inside. But he goes on in the next paragraph, he quotes the Gemara in Sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah that tells the story of Miriam Bas Bilga, who went off and she married a non-Jewish general. And when the Beis HaMikdash was being destroyed, she came and she stood on the Mizbeach and she kicked the Mizbeach. And she said, Lucas, Lucas, calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are you happy now? You steal the money of the Jewish people with all their karbanos. Right, what right do you have to do this? The Gemara says, how did such a thing become? How did she marry a non-Jewish person? How did she have such a chutzpah to come into the Beis HaMikdash, to trample the Mizbeach? Where did she learn to speak this way? And the Gemara says that everything that a child says is learned from the parents. The language of a child is really just a continuation of the language of the parents. The way the parents act or the way that the children are going to act. It says for Simcha Zisal, it's not that she heard her parents say, Lucas, Lucas. But there was something in the way that her parents didn't feel that commitment, didn't feel that excitement, that connection to Yiddishkeit. Their Yiddishkeit wasn't alive and well and energized the way that it should be. That she learned that Yiddishkeit is not important. And slowly, slowly, that failure to educate this daughter, she went on to become this woman who married a non-Jewish general, who was involved in the trampling of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says that the punishment was that the family that she came from, their spot in the Beis HaMikdash, the ring that was used in the shechting area of the Beis HaMikdash for that family, and the window, the storage area, where the members of that family stored their possessions, was closed off forever. Says Rav Simcha Zisal, look how one Jewish girl who was not educated properly affected so many people, affected thousands of people. How sensitive, how careful we need to be. The Indian of Chanukah, Chinuch, to make sure, to remind ourselves of what it means to properly educate the next generation. And again, he was a giant of spirit, a person who understood what the generation needed and had the courage to stand up and to make those decisions. I want to end with one final Chanukah insight from Rav Simcha Zisal. If you turn back to the front side of the page, the very famous question of the Beis Yosef, we'll daven Maariv in 2 minutes. The very famous question of the Beis Yosef. Rav Yosef Karo asks, why in fact do we celebrate 8 nights of Chanukah if really they had enough oil for one night? There were 7 miraculous nights. The Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, gives his famous answers, his 3 answers. Hundreds of answers have been collected on this topic. But there's a very, very beautiful answer, and I think it really, again, like Rav Simcha Zisal told us, if you taste a little bit, you get the whole picture. I think this Dvar Torah really captures sort of the essence of Rav Simcha Zisal's outlook on life. And I saw it quoted in the Mar B'Chaim from Rav Chaim Brim in the final source. Rav Chaim Brim explained. He says, V'dachirna b'shnas tafshin beis. I remember it was the year 1942. V'echel mi yamei Chanukah. Amadti b'heichal yeshivas Eitz Chaim. I was standing in the Eitz Chaim yeshiva me'acharei habima, and I was talking to Rav Elval Chichik, and he says, I want to share with you an insight from Rav Simcha Zisel, the Alter of Kelm. He said in the name of Rav Simcha Zisel, the answer to the Beis Yosef's famous question, at the end of the third line, Halamai kabu anes shemen gam al yom harishon. Why do we have a day of celebration for the first day? They had enough oil for the first day. V'tirets Rav Simcha Zisel Zatzal, where it's bolted. Shaha gufa, sheshemen boer v'doleg harei hu gamnes. Rav Simcha Zisel said, it's true. There's oil that burns in a miraculous fashion. But the very fact that oil burns is also a wondrous thing. Pick your eyes up once in a while. Look at the world around you. Be mindful of the kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in all the little things that Hashem does for us. He quotes the Gemara in Tanis Chaf Hei, that when Rabbi Chanina Mendoza found that his daughter had accidentally poured vinegar into the Shabbos licht instead of oil, and she was so distraught, what's going to be? Vinegar doesn't burn. And her father says to her, Misha Amar L'Shemen V'Yidlok, Yomar L'Chometz V'Yidlok. The one who could command oil to burn could just as easily command vinegar to burn. You don't have to worry. And the Gemara goes on to say it was literally a miniature Hanukkah miracle. That vinegar that was poured into the Shabbos candles, right, lasted the entire Shabbos. Not just Friday night, it lasted the entire Shabbos. Says Rav Simcha Zisel, sometimes we get caught up on the, so to speak, the flashy things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does in this world. We get caught up in the big things. But again, like Rabbi Saul Salanter taught us last week, the little challah is the one that gets the bracha. The little wholesome challah is the one that gets the bracha. Says Rav Simcha Zisel, you know why we celebrate 8 nights of Chanukah? The first night was regular oil. But the fact that they found oil, the fact that regular oil had the ability to burn, right? Try to see the big picture of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for you. Not to get caught only in the so to speak, the lofty, big miracles of this world. Says Rav Simcha Zisel, 3 lines from the end. Haresha gam Hashem en gufa tzorech la'amir miyuchadnes min shemayim sheyidlok. The way that Rav Eliyahu Baruch explained Yosef in that caravan, that everything is so precise. And if Hashem wants oil to burn, oil will burn. And if Hashem wants vinegar to burn, vinegar will burn. And if Hashem makes regular oil burn, realize that Hashem is there. Hashem is involved with that. And every detail of our lives is being governed so precisely, so misudar. Again, the hallmark of Rav Simcha Zisel. Everything so precise, so calculated, so thought out. And therefore the first night of Chanukah, or maybe the last night of Chanukah, we stop to recognize that what? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. That everything is precisely calculated. The fact that oil can burn is nothing less than a miracle. Says Rav Chaim Brim, in conclusion, when I heard this Vart in 1942 in the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, Yerushalayim, when I heard Rav Elval Chichik share this insight from Rav Simcha Zisel with me, it's as if I found a treasure chest. What an insight to take with us, not only for these next couple of days of Chanukah, but to take it into every bit of life's experience, to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there governing everything so precisely. We have to take the time, like Rav Simcha Zisel did, to stop and to pay attention and to have that added dimension of sensitivity and that added awareness of what it means to be mechanech our children. To have the sensitivity to realize that a statement that could be said in one's home could lead Rahman al-Islam to a child who strays so far as to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Everything that we say, everything that we do has to be with a cheshbon, has to be calculated. And Amir Tzashem, Halavai, in the spirit of Chanukah, we should take this Dvar Torah with us. We should take these few teachings of Rav Simcha Zisel with us. And Amir Tzashem, we too will be able to live such elevated and such calculated lives. Shkoyach, Kishabis, Freilich and Chanukah.